Chinook. It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage,
how things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskans.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller, and with me are Carl Brimner of the Fairbanks Native Association and Mike Irwin of the Tanana Chiefs Conference. We're continuing our discussion of the Indian Child Welfare Act. The act was passed by the United States Congress in November 1978, and hearings on regulations for implementation of the act were held in Juneau. Both Mike and Carl testified there on what they wanted to see included in the regulations and some possibilities for child welfare programs after the act is funded by Congress. Mike Irwin of the Tanana Chiefs Conference talks about what this could mean in the villages.
Well, at least in my villages, we sent out all kinds of information on it, especially when we found out we were going to have the regulation hearing in Alaska. And we've been trying to really hype it, let people know in our villages what we might be able to expect within a couple of years once we get some appropriations for it from Congress. And I think that probably now that, well, once the regulations are in finalization, we know just about what we're going to be able to do in terms of programs and those sorts of things. I think we're probably going to just start really recruiting, trying to find out what the people want, the people in our region, you know, what they'd like to see once we get the money and that kind of thing, because we are going to have that on record, so when we get the money, we'll know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Before you went to Juneau, did you go back to the villages and see how they wanted to see the regulations changed at all?
No, this was such a hurried up thing. It was, they announced the regulations and we had like 8 days to get down to Juneau, something like that. I worked for 5 full days on developing my testimony and then had to take off. There was no time to get any kind of village input.
The regulations, according to law, are supposed to be in effect, I think, May of 79?
May 8th this year.
And what's happened is the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C. contracted out to private organizations to conduct the hearings, and they, in order to get all the information and all the regulations written by then, they were under a lot of pressure, and their timetable was not too broad in scope. And as a result, like Mike says, we have very little time to really respond, other than the knowledge that we all had in terms of working with it. But to get it out to the community could have been better.
What do you have to do to get testimony organized?
Just read the act and take what it means to you and just say, well, these are my concerns about it. This is what I'd like to see done with this. This is my interpretation of what I'm reading here. For instance, the 5 days before I went down there, I spent just going over the law and over the law and over the law. And I got down to Juneau, and the day before the testimony, a bunch of us contractors, and we met with the state and a lot of other people. We had a lot of meetings on it, and getting other people's points of view and discovering things in the act that you really hadn't seen after looking at it for 5 days. It was really remarkable, and you just had to go there with your own thoughts and then hope that you could get some more input. And
somebody else would maybe fill in the blanks that you left out.
That's really true, because like Mike says, it was remarkable because we all looked at it essentially from one point of view. And then when we met with people like State Attorney General and State Social Services, naturally they were looking at it from another point of view, and it was interesting to hear their comments, and it was really helpful in a lot of respects.
What were some of the other points of view?
Well, one of them that comes to mind right now was the law seems to be a little ambiguous in terms of a situation where an Indian child may be from more than one reservation. And what would happen in terms of priorities then that would be for adoption? Whose reservation would that child then go to? And the law doesn't seem to have accounted for that at this point. So just technical things like that I never really thought about when I read it.
Would that be a case of belonging to different villages in Alaska?
Another point along that line was the Department of Health and Social Services, when they were meeting with us, they went through, and I don't know exactly where it is in the law, but it states that in an adoption proceeding, the natural parents can back out of it or change their mind and just halt the adoption proceedings any time before finalization. And as it is presently in the state, the practice that DSS uses is when they place a child in the home, there's a six-month probation period before finalization just to see if the thing is going to work out. And then they were really worried, wow, you know, we could have this child in there for 5 months and 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden the natural mother come and say, hey, I want my kid back. And that was their concern. They were saying, we might just have to shorten the probation period. I had never even looked at that. It meant nothing to me when mm-hmm. I read it. It mm-hmm. looked okay. It was fine by me.
Well, what specifically were you concerned about?
Just our, where it was going to concern us and being able to handle it, our cultural matters the way that we want to,
you know,
the proceedings.
An example?
One easy example is the foster home licensing procedure. That's, right now I feel it's too strict for a village, and I'd like to see us develop our own. And that was, you know, just one example of the things that I was looking at.
How about you?
Yeah, I would agree. It'd be nice to be able to license our own foster homes as opposed to going through state social services. In other states, in the lower 48, for instance, many times the state is not the only agency that provides licensing, and according to law, that's delegated to private organizations in many cases. And I'd like to see that happen here in Alaska, whereas right now it isn't. It's only the state.
So a corporation or even something as small as a village corporation could define its own standards?
Yeah.
Right.
Hopefully. And we've even, somebody posed the thought that we might even be able to, besides developing our own licensing procedure, to, as Carl said, issue our own licenses, or else go directly to the central state office in Juneau instead of being filtered through all the, you know, the regional, and before it finally becomes final. You know, a simpler way of saying, hey, we have a good family out here in the village who would provide good foster care for children that need it, and we don't want to have to lose them by putting them through all the bureaucratic red tape.
Yeah, it's a lengthy process. Now, it's in our child welfare program, I think it's taking us a minimum of 2 months and more like 3 months in order to get a foster home licensed. And it goes from, well, we provide all the interviews and the basic information, which is all compiled into a home study, and then it's submitted to the regional office in Fairbanks, and usually two or three people look at it there and give their approval. And if so, then it goes on to the state or the capital in Juneau, and it's finalized, and it's just a lengthy process, really. A lot of times, one of the things that I'm afraid of is that you have foster parents who really want to do it, and they want to do it as soon as possible, and they're kind of discouraged by the length of time that it takes.
I had one example of that this morning. One of a man from Tanana was in the office, and went up and shook hands with him, and I said, well, it looks like it's going to come through finally. And he goes, all I could say was, well, it's about time. I started with him like 4 or 5 months ago, and I'm really lucky that him and his wife are still even showing interest.
What are the specific requirements of, what do they have to go through?
It's quite lengthy, the regulations and that. Just essentially, naturally, there's requirements within the home itself.
Like cleanliness? Income, yeah. what are just
fire extinguishers, smoke detectors, rear exits, private, you know, certain standards for privacy for the children. Just a lot of really, you know, they have to have water tests or water clearance. And what I found to be the hardest thing, and what's just backlogged me, is tuberculosis clearance. You have to have TB clearance for everybody a year of age or older in the home. And sometimes the TB team down in Anchorage might have mom's results, mm-hmm. and the state up here in Fairbanks has dad's, and then a couple, three, four different schools have the kids' TB results. And trying to bring something like that together, that is the number one catch right there. And then you have to do the interviews, of course, and get them typed up, and you have to get water clearance and medical releases signed, and three letters of reference from, you know, people who can say these people are good. And And then you get to submit it to the state and let it sit in their offices for God knows how long.
Yeah, it all takes a while. It really does. Most of the regulations, what they've set as guidelines, make sense. It just takes a long time to get it all together, and people get really discouraged. And as in our office, we only have one child welfare worker, so if she's working with several foster parents and also doing some counseling with some of the homes, she just gets really swamped, and it's hard for her to get it all together. So it takes time.
Carl Brimner, Social Services Coordinator for the Fairbanks Native Association, and Mike Irwin, Child Welfare Worker for the Tanana Chiefs Conference. For Chinook Patterns, I'm Paula Schiller, and Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage,
how things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. On this program, we've been talking about the Indian Child Welfare Act with Carl Brimner. He's Social Services Coordinator for the Fairbanks Native Association. The FNA has recently been awarded a criminal justice grant of approximately $108,000 to set up and run a youth intervention services program. I asked Carl what the money would do, but that's not the beginning of the story.
Let me even back up one more step. How the money came about was it was earmarked for the Fairbanks area based on a study that was done last spring. And the study indicated that a number of youth, particularly male, were being referred to the Fairbanks Correctional Center because there was nowhere else to put them. And specifically in cases of status offenders, which means something like a runaway or a situation like that, where it's a crime that's or it's a law that's being broken by a young person that would not apply to an adult because we have, well, for instance, drinking underage, something like that.
So kids charged with that were going to the adult correctional.
That's correct, right. And so the community naturally was concerned about it, and the study had indicated some of the problems with that, which some of them are obvious, naturally. And the LEAA money through the federal government was funneled through state criminal justice, and they earmarked it for the Fairbanks area. We submitted a grant for it, and were awarded the grant, and specifically intend to do two kinds of services. One is to do crisis intervention counseling at the time of the problem. And let me just kind of give an example there. Say, for instance, kind of in the late hours, usually between 10 and 2 o'clock in the morning when most runaways are picked up by the police, an individual is picked up and referred over to us. At that time, what we'll be doing is sitting down with that individual, that youngster, and finding out what the problem is. And then also we're obligated by law to contact the parents and let them know where their child is. At that point, given the fact that we know maybe a little bit of what the problem is, we've contacted the parents, the initial plan of action would be to reunite the child with the family and then do some follow-up counseling. If that's not possible because we can't get a hold of the parents or maybe there's abuse or neglect involved, at that point in time, what we'll try to do is put the individual into one of our foster homes, which is the second component of the program, really.
So this just sort of bypasses the regular system where the kid would automatically just be sent to the jail?
Right, right. And these would be individuals that would not be dangerous to the community. We wouldn't be handling people like that where our program services couldn't cope with that right now.
So. And the other part is foster
homes, right. And we envision them as just emergency foster homes, a situation where an individual would be in the home for maybe 2 or 3 days, not more than that, although there's a possibility that on exceptional cases that they may be a little longer. They would be what we call emergency foster homes because of the short length of time, and the individuals who would be foster parents would not be receiving any payment, as many foster parents do on a long-term basis through the state. The program was designed after, well, Florida does it statewide currently, and they found it to be very successful. And there's also a program in Anchorage called Family Connection, which has been doing it, I guess it's the third year now they're into, and they've found it to be very successful.
It seems to be that this is a particularly urban problem and solution.
Yeah, it seems to be. And, well, naturally one of the reasons is because of Alaska's vastness. It's hard for someone to be coming in from the village in a runaway situation unless they had airfare or unless there was roads that are accessible to the Fairbanks area. We think that there may be even occasions where naturally we might have runaways from out of state, and we've thought about that, and those kinds of individuals will present some difficult problems for us in order to get them back to their homes naturally. But we don't anticipate a great amount of that.
But they would fall under the procedure. They would be, you would be called on any child,
right,
whether or not they are a resident.
Right, right. It would be open to, specifically it's geared for the Fairbanks area, but it would be open to anyone, right?
And it doesn't have to be, the kid doesn't have to be native either.
That's correct. It's open to the population in general. Although it's under the Fairbanks Native Association, it's a grant that's accessible for everyone, a program that'll be accessible for everyone.
Is it mostly, though, Native kids that are getting into trouble?
Well, as best we can tell, the statistics have indicated maybe a little bit less than half seem to be runaway Native children. Now, it's difficult to tell it for sure because no one's really seen the problem because there's not been an agency really dealing with it. So we don't really have accurate statistics. The best that we have is just statistics from different agencies, and trying to put those together, sometimes you get a duplication and sometimes you're missing some too. So that's one of the, another thing the program will attempt to do is gather statistics to just see how big the problem is and just to see what is needed in the future too. At one point in time there was talk of having a shelter, a 5 or 6 bed shelter for youth, and at this point in time, we're not sure if that's necessary or not, but we hope that by gathering data for the next 6-7 months that we'll be able to make a determination on that.
Do you have foster homes already?
Well, we do that we're using from the Child Welfare Program, although those are limited right now, too. We have had a situation, even before any of the staff were on board, where the Public Defender's Office called us and had someone that they needed to place, and we were able to handle that. But right now, under this new program, we have no foster homes. And we anticipate it will take between 2 and 3 months before we'll get our first foster homes, really. Family Connection has indicated that in the Anchorage area that they have an average of 12 foster homes on board. And they've been successful using that amount. We think that we may need more, even though we're a smaller community, because we're taking on many of the referrals that would go to other programs in Anchorage, programs that we don't have in Fairbanks.
The foster parents or foster home people in taking these kids in will have to be the kind of people that you could call up at midnight and say, we've got a kid here. And what else do they have to be?
Well, naturally, they'd have to be, yeah, that's a good point. They'd have to be someone to be willing to do that, right? It can't happen the next day at a convenient hour. It would also have to be someone who's understanding of a child coming into their home who has a problem. And that's why they're there in the first place. And to be able to cope with that problem, not a problem that's unreasonable in the sense of usually destructive, but something that a child may need some attention in addition to what we've given them at that time, just to get them accustomed to the surroundings as they go into the home. So it'll take someone with patience and understanding, really.
And there are also state licensing requirements this person would have to meet. Can you give us a rundown on some of those.
Right. We are anticipating that all our foster homes would be state licensed. And there again, what will happen is that we'll do all the preliminary work in terms of interviewing and also putting together the home studies and all the documented information that the state needs and submitting that to them. And then from there, they give the approval for the foster home. It's a lengthy process.
What are some of the things the state looks for?
Well, they look for, in the case of these foster homes, we'll be dealing with people that are adolescent age. And so if the foster parents have their own children in the home, and if they're, say, of male gender, and there was a female adolescent coming into the home, naturally they would have to have their own room. That would be one provision that would be necessary. So that might be restricting in some cases where a family only has one bedroom with one child, and they would have to be the same sex then. Others are just matters of fire extinguisher and escape routes from the room in case of fire, water tests if it's outside of the Fairbanks area, things of that nature. The interviews themselves, we hope to just be able to find out whether or not these would be the right kinds of people for a foster home.
Is there an income requirement or anything like that?
No, not specifically. Naturally, we need a situation that they can maintain their own family and their own lifestyle, particularly in this case, maybe even more so than in state homes, because there would not be any payments coming to these people. Unless it would be a longer visit, and then perhaps there might be payments. But in most cases, no. So, yeah, they would have to be self-supporting. They can't rely on the payment from the state.
How are you looking for the people? Are you just making announcements that this is a needed thing? Or?
Well, what we've done with our child welfare program so far is we've made some contacts with many of the church groups. We have posters around the city in various, hopefully, strategic places, just contacts, people that we know in the community, really. It may take more than that. We've done some radio spots at different times, and we may want to do more of that. Also, maybe some ads in the newspaper, things of that nature. I've been told by Family Connection in Anchorage that once you've come up with a core of foster homes, one of the best ways to continue to recruit new ones is self-referrals from the existing foster parents. So we hope that'll happen too. But that's something down the road, really.
So one family sees it working and sees a chance, sees another family having no problems with this and actually.
Mm-hmm. Or a situation where Mr. and Mrs. Smith are foster parents, and they're really enjoying it, and they tell their friends down the street, and they say, yeah, wow, that's something we'd like to do. We'd like to be able to have another child in our home or be able to help someone who's in need.
Carl Brimner of the Fairbanks Native Association, he described a new program of youth intervention services. For Chinook Patterns, I'm Paula Schiller, and Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.